Sahana bhavatu, sahana bhavatu, sahaviryam karavavahai, tejasvinavaditamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti. Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Rama
So yesterday we spoke about the five topics of the Upanishads. Do you remember what were they? Can somebody list them? Yes.
Brahman,
the nature of Brahman.
The nature of Brahman.
Yes. First.
The nature of the jiva.
Okay.
The material nature.
Material energy. Yes. So these three are outlining Sambandha.
Okay.
And then the fourth.
Then the. How to achieve the abode of the Lord?
Yes.
And then the nature of the abode of the Lord.
The nature of the supreme goal. And there is another thing. Yes.
The status of jivan.
Yes. That means what? What does it mean? The status of jivan mukti.
So there are different levels from shraddha to jivan.
Means the position of the
it is
jiva.
Included. It is included in this. Yes.
Means the position of the jiva after attaining the abode of the Lord, like that.
After attaining liberation,
yeah.
Does it merges with Brahman, as the impersonalists say, or it remains individual?
There's five types of liberation. That's one of them, merging.
Yeah, but the impersonalists they think that there is just one liberation, one type of liberation. Well, the Mayavadis.
There's more.
And we accept that there are more. So some people say the jiva just becomes one with Brahman. And some people say no, it remains individual. So this also, this is what it means. What is the position of the jiva when it attains liberation? This is the meaning. Yes.
That liberation of merging with Krishna, that's temporary, no?
Yes, it's a yuji. And therefore, some devotees say it's not technically it's not even, it's actually part of samsara in a sense, because you go there but then you have to come back again. So you don't actually go out of this vicious circle. So it's temporary.
Why is it considered a type of liberation?
Because big amount of time there is no material sufferings anymore. When you attain the jiva attains the Brahman, the mukti, liberation, but because it's not natural for the jiva to be inactive, then at one point it should come down. So it depends from which point you're looking. Therefore we don't accept this as real liberation, the Vaishnavas. There is this famous verse out of this Svarupena Vivastiti from Bhagavatam. The real liberation is to attain the actual position of the soul, which is connected with Krishna, with particular type of devotional service. This is the real liberation. But it is counted as liberation, generally, for the general audience.
The rest are eternal.
The other four, they're personal liberation. Yes, we accept them. Is that okay? Yes.
Well, in the impersonal liberation, merging with the Lord, does the jiva actually merge with the Lord, or is it the, does he feel like he is merging?
Well, if it, if it's possible to come down to the material, the same jiva, that means it's not actually, it doesn't become one of the.
Right.
So, from this perspective, no. But it, I guess it, it feels like, I don't know exactly how, what is the feeling there. The general feeling is that you, there is no any more anxieties and suffering, so it feels like a big relief, and it's kind of happiness, Brahmananda. But compare this with the happiness of devotional service, it's very insignificant. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. You're the second. That's the second time I'm getting this today. All right, that's clear. Huh? You can go on. So there is no difference between how the different schools of that accept the Vedanta, the Upanishads. There is no difference in their understanding what are the five topics of the Upanishads. They all accept these five topics as the main discussion, but as we know, they interpret these five topics in different ways. And part of the reason is the language of the Upanishad is very, the Upanishads is very esoteric. It's different language. It's the language of the rishis. In 11th canto Bhagavatam, Krishna says that he likes this kind of language also. It's indirect, hidden meaning. And this is the way the sages talk. And this is part of the reason why there are different schools of Vedanta. Another reason is the statements of the Upanishads are sometimes, they look like they say different things on the same subject. They look from different perspective. And sometimes even it looks like they're disagreeing. Like, for example, this classical text from the Upanishad, Tattvamasi, which Shankara takes as the Mahavakya. The main mantra from the Veda. You are that, Tattvamasi. So it appears in the Upanishads, and it can be interpreted in a sense that there is no difference between the jiva and the Lord. It's one thing. But there is also another statement, Nityo Nityananam, Nityo Nityananam. This one, which definitely points out that there is a difference. There is one entity which is supreme, and he maintains everybody else. And also, what was this? In Mundaka Upanishad, there is this words used there for Brahman, describing Brahman. Ardishya and Agrahya. That means invisible and ungraspable. But also the same Upanishad uses other terms for describing Brahman. Sarvavit, he's all omniscient. Sarvagya, all-knowing. So how to reconcile these seemingly contradicting statements from the Upanishads? This one Upanishad. How to reconcile this? It's a difficult. It's a difficult problem, and many Western scholars, they became bewildered when they were studying the Upanishads, and they came up with the conclusion that the Upanishads, they don't present a coherent system of philosophy at all. They're just bunch of contradictory statements here and there in these books, and And if there is at all some system of philosophy, it must be the philosophy of Shankara. This is as far as they can go. The Advaita. So a few words about... Yes?
Is there a difference between Sarvavit and Sarvagya?
Well, let me see what I wrote here. Sarvavit. Sarvavit. Sarvavit means all-knowing and Sarvagya omniscient. Well, probably you know better English than me. So what is different between omniscient and all-knowing? Is there any difference in English?
So omniscient means conscious of everything.
Mm-hmm. And all-knowing
means knowing, having knowledge of everything. Being conscious of and having knowledge of.
Slight distinction. Otherwise, in Sanskrit, originally, I'm not aware what is the difference between these. But in English, at least, we get some subtle difference. Is that okay? So a few words about the Western scholars, especially the Indologists, because we said that they failed to understand the message of the Upanishads. As we know, the first Indologists, they came to India to study the culture and the Vedas, sacred texts of India. But they had an agenda. It was not just how they like to present themselves. It was not just scientific research from a neutral point of view. They had very clear agenda, these persons. They were all, almost all of them, they were, you can say, militant Christians. They might not like this. They hear it, but... They had an agenda to translate the Vedas into English and to present them to the Western world as texts written by uncultured and ignorant people, and to prove the superiority of the Western so-called culture and religion, in this case Christianity, to prove the superiority over the natives and their aboriginal religion. So you can imagine, and these people they get paid by the British government. They got big money, or it was the East West Company in the beginning. They got big money, like Max Müller. He was paid to translate the Vedas in this way, and he did good job, although he never came to India, actually, in his life. He was never in India. But he did a good job and translated the Vedas in such a way and presented the Vedic culture in such a way that it was distorted, actually. And although if you talk to modern Indologists, they will become offended if you point out these things, and they will say something like, well, you think we never made any step, we never made any progress since the first Indologists. Now we study the Vedas from neutral point of view. Now we're not Christians. And that's true. Most of them are nowadays, they don't have any religious background, but still they use the same books produced by this first Indologists, and they use basically the same framework of thinking. So these people, they say that some of them, they say that the Upanishads, they don't have coherent system of philosophy. So naturally, this cannot be accepted as in a serious way from the followers of the Vedic tradition. And since the time of the first Indologists, they have been always a tension between the followers of the Vedas, those who practice, and these scholars. And this tension is going on even now, today. and it doesn't depend on the tradition of the, Vedic tradition school. Everybody who accepts the Vedas, they don't accept the conclusions of the scholars. Because according to the Vedas, the Upanishads themselves, in order to study the Upanishads, you have to accept certain discipline. You have to, for example, you have to have a qualified teacher, a guru, who comes from this tradition. So if you don't follow the way of study and the tradition, and you try to study this tradition in your own way, then naturally the conclusions that you're going to reach will be different, and they won't be accepted by the traditionalists, by the people who actually apply, live this knowledge and have faith in it. So this is the main reason for this tension between the followers of the Vedas and the scholars, and it's going on today. Actually, from the Vedic point of view, the academic scholars, they don't have a right, they're not qualified to study Veda, what to speak about the Upanishads. Because Upanishads are meant for the sannyasis, for the renounced order. So if people who are not qualified to study certain subject matter, they study anyway, then the conclusion they reach should be disregarded. It's not of any value. Unless it is connected somehow with Krishna. So, Srila Vyasadev summarized the Upanishads in Vedanta Sutra, and this is the proof that the Upanishads contain a unified system of philosophy, because they are summarized by the literal incarnation of Narayana in the Vedanta Sutra. And Srila Prabhupada also wrote about this in the sixth mantra of the Ishupanishad in the purport. Okay, so now, who has Ishupanishad? Because one of you is going to read the quote now.
Six.
The purport to mantra six.
What page is that?
46. At the end, there is a complete agreement among the. So, can wants to read it?
Where in the purport?
In the purport, at the end.
Last paragraph.
Yes.
At the present, there are many countries.
Yeah, but you go down, and there is complete agreement among the Upanishads, Vedanta Sutra, Vedas, from there. Fine. You want to read?
There is complete agreement amongst the Upanishads, Vedanta, the Vedas, Bhagavad Gita, and Srimad Bhagavatam. And no one should try to reach any conclusion about the Vedas without receiving instructions from members of Vyasadeva's disciplic succession, or at least from those who believe in the personality of Godhead and his diverse energies. According to Bhagavad Gita.
Okay. As they are explained in the Sri Upanishad. Okay. Thank you. So a few words about Upanishad before we start with the study guide. So Upanishad, as we mentioned, appears in first of all, usually when you see the 10 Upanishads, principal Upanishads listed, the list starts with Ishupanishad. And this Upanishad appears in the Samhita part of the Shukla Yajur Veda, which makes him unique, because Samhita is Samhita, then you have Brahmana, Aranyaka, and then at the end you have Upanishads. But this Upanishad appears directly there. And this signifies, because it appears at the end of this Samhita, in the 39th chapter, this signifies that all the activities prescribed in this Samhita are to be performed with knowledge. That means Buddhi Yoga, the one of the, or actually the main topic of Bhagavad Gita, Buddhi Yoga, action combined with knowledge. And among all Indian transcendentalists and scholars, it is highly respected. This Upanishad is very, very respected, although it contains only 18 mantras. Everybody knows its value, and Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan even calls Isha Upanishad the Acharya among the Shrutis. So what Prabhupada gave us, the translation and commentaries on Isha Upanishad, is something very valuable. We have the most important Upanishad translated and commented. So I don't want to start with the study guide now. I'd like to end up and to start Thursday the whole thing. So if you have any questions, yes.
When the name is picked out like Rig Veda Yajurveda, so that what you mentioned, this is defined as Rig Veda Sanhita.
Well, usually, not always, but if you read books about the Vedas, usually what they do is they will say Rig Veda, but they mean the Samhita. They don't mean Brahmanas and Aranyakas or Upanishads. Usually, this is, I guess, custom, because this is the main part of the Veda.
Sagra Sambandha.
Sir?
It's like a Sambandha?
Yeah. You can take Samhita as a Sambandha.
Well, I think you mentioned yesterday that the Brahmanas and the Aranyakas, they are, or at least the Brahmanas, they are written in prose.
The Brahmanas are in prose, yes, I think.
And you said also that the Yajurveda is in prose.
Yeah.
So even the Samhitas of the Yajurveda.
I think the Samhitas should be, well, this is part of the Samhita of Yajurveda.
Okay.
And it's obviously Isha Upanishad is in verse form. Yeah. I guess part of Yajurveda is in prose. The main part which describes how to conduct the sacrifice. I think this part is in prose. Maybe some. Like Bhagavatam mainly is poetry. But you have in fifth canto a huge chapters which are yes, you cannot see the poetry so prominent there. It's more or less prose. Okay. So please read the first the pages of the introduction and invocation and the purport, also the first mantra, if you haven't till now, for Thursday.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Shri Prabhupada ki jai.